This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamualaikum, Abu Muawiyah, and welcome to the show.
Waalaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
First of all, for our audience who are not familiar with your work, can you please start off with telling us a bit about yourself?
Okay, my name is Ismail Khamda. I'm more commonly known by my kunya Abu Muawiyah. And, I've been involved in Islamic work from a very young age, started studying Islam at the age of 13, started getting involved in teaching and dawah at the age of 16, wrote my first book when I was 23, published it when I was 25, I've been involved in Islamic work for a long time. And more recently, in the past 3 years, I've gotten involved in what I call Islamic self-help. I've started a blog called IslamicSelfHelp.com, and I've written a couple of self-help books on time management and self-confidence from an Islamic perspective. So I've branched out in that direction. Generally, I like to think of myself as a writer. That's my strength. Yeah.
So what do you actually mean by Islamic self-help?
Well, self-help is, you know, one of the most popular written genres at the moment. When you look at best-selling books around the world, by Stephen Covey, Tim Ferriss, Brian Tracy, it's called the self-help genre, which is basically books that you read to help yourself become a better person, you know, and fields like confidence, stress management, goal setting, time management, anger management, anything to help you improve yourself.
Yeah.
So in training and in teaching, it's called personal development. But in the book writing, it's called self-help. So I noticed, you know, there's a lot of amazing books out there in these topics, in this field, but not that much by Muslim authors. And, you know, the Quran and Hadith have so much to contribute in this field that I took it upon myself to start writing about this.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you there. Like when I go on to find books on Amazon and stuff, there are very little out there by Muslim authors. So it is a needed thing that we have more people working on Islamic self-help. So I'm actually curious to know what, one of your books is called The Best of Creation, which is a book around self-confidence. Now I want to know what was the motivation behind writing such topic?
Okay, this book is quite interesting. It actually started off as a writing of letters to myself. Right? I've got this habit that I write motivational pieces to myself whenever I'm feeling down, whenever I feel giving up. Right? So I was writing, I was researching, I came across some nice quotations, some hadiths, some Quranic verses, some du'as. And after a while, I realized I've got enough content to write a book on the entire topic. And I myself, I've been suffering with confidence issues basically all my life, right? I'm an introvert by nature. I'm a very quiet person. I like writing. I like reading. I like being alone. And, you know, growing up in a society that values extroverts, I grew up with very low self-confidence. I was trying to be somebody I'm not. It's only in the past few years that I realized that, alhamdulillah, Allah made me an introvert for a reason. It makes me a good speaker, makes me a good writer, it makes me creative, it makes me a good reader, and I learned to embrace who I am. And that's really what the book is about, you know, embracing the gifts that Allah has given you. One line that I speak about in that book, which is actually, I think, one of my most popular Facebook posts as well, is my life motto: be yourself as long as being yourself is halal. This is something that's like a life motto of mine. Be yourself, because we're trying too hard to be other people. We're trying, you know, we see somebody who we think is pious, or we think they, you know, they're good people. We want to dress like them. We want to look like them. We want to talk like them. And those are for the practicing Muslim. For the other Muslims, they want to look and dress like other people. But no one's being their authentic self. And when I study the lives of the Sahaba and the early Muslims, everybody was unique. I mean, Umar wasn't trying to be like Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr wasn't trying to be like Umar. They both accepted that they had conflicting personalities and they were still best friends. Right? They have independent or individual personalities. So you'd find that Usman was a more quiet person who'd spend more time at home reading Quran. Umar was a more extroverted person who'd spend more time out helping people and talking to people. And both ways were fine. You know, you can be a practicing Muslim and a valuable member of society regardless of your strengths and weaknesses. And that's really where the book came about from. Most of the topics I speak about in that book are topics from my own life. You know, dealing with failure, dealing with setbacks, dealing with dealing with fear, all of this is my life story. So really this book came about as writing a message to myself.
Yeah. I totally understand that whole point that you made about being an introvert and actually trying to fit in an extroverted world. And it reminds me of a book that I read on this topic, because I myself, although I'm hosting this podcast and everything, I am an introvert and I'm a very quiet person. And the funny thing is, there was a book on this called The Power of Introverts by Susan Cain. Have you seen that book?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books. That's one of the books that really changed me.
And it's when she was like writing on that book, and she was saying about, oh, this is how we behave, and I was like, oh my god, that sounds like me. It's like extroverts is the way to be kind of thing, and so we all try to mimic that in order to fit in, but then we lose a part of ourselves.
Yeah, actually, a funny story about that. When I was a teenager, one of my teachers took me for a drive in his car. And he told me that you don't want to be an introvert when you grow up. And I didn't know what an introvert was back then, but it sounded like something really bad. And for the next few years, I had this huge conflict inside. I don't want to be an introvert. And you know, the book you spoke about by Susan Cain, Power of Introverts, that really helped me to come to grips with the fact that this is how Allah made me. And he made me like this for a reason. And it's fine. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine to be introvert and perfectly fine to be an extrovert as well. So, I mean, for all the extroverts out there as well. So, I mean, so you explained that this book that you wrote about self-confidence, it was coming from finding a solution to your own struggles that you have. But have you noticed that there is it's very common to find low confidence amongst the Muslim community?
Low confidence in the Muslim community?
Yeah, especially since you're doing work a lot in the community and stuff. I mean, is that something you noticed as well?
Yeah, actually, the second and third chapters of the books are based on my experiences with the community. You know, the second chapter of the book deals with misconceptions about self-confidence, and the third one about causes of low self-confidence. And really, both of those chapters are based on things I've seen in the Muslim community. Let's give you an example. The second chapter, I speak there about the fact that many Muslims think a confident person is arrogant, right? And when you build up your confidence, they want to put you down. They want to put you in your place to make you humble. And what that does is it really kills confidence. And that's not how the Prophet ﷺ dealt with people, you know? He would tell even his enemies, he would tell them you are intelligent. He would tell them that you are sincere. He would tell them that you are wise. He wouldn't put people down. He even told people not to put themselves down. He said, don't belittle yourself. So the idea of putting people down to humble them, that's not from the Sunnah. And again, this is something which I struggled with and which I know a lot of people struggle with. A lot of people would write to me saying that, you know, where do I draw the line between confidence and arrogance? How do I know whether I'm being confident or I'm being arrogant? So this inner conflict is there for a lot of young people. And I believe it's affected the Ummah as a whole. Because now we think that to be humble, you have to think low of yourself. But guess what? If you think that you're stupid, if you think that you're dumb, if you think you can't do anything, then you're not going to do anything with your life. The entire Ummah is thinking like that. Muslim world's going to do nothing. Right? And then we look around the world today, the Muslims are not leading in any fields. It's because we don't have the confidence to lead. We're killing each other's confidence. One Muslim starts doing good work, everybody else pounces on him or her and starts talking bad.
To humble them,
right? And then that person gives up. And what we're doing is we're killing the Ummah. We're really killing any initiative from the Ummah to rise up. So confidence is an issue. In the third chapter, I speak about parents. And you know, parents do this, call their child stupid, call their child an idiot, tell the child you're useless. You're killing your child's confidence. You know, teachers. I spoke about a friend of mine who the teachers used to call him Dumb John, you know, and it completely destroyed him. I mean, you know, completely destroyed his life. I spoke about bullies. I spoke about culture, you know. Our cultures kill our confidence. I mean, think about women who are forced into marriages. That's not from Islam at all. But we know it happens. I mean, I've seen guys who've been forced into marriage to people who they don't like. And those guys and those girls who are forced into marriage, 90% of the time they don't have the confidence to say no and to stand by their decision. Because the family and the culture have just crushed whatever confidence is in them. So this is a major issue I've seen throughout the Ummah, and I felt, you know, something needed to be done about it. So I went on Facebook, my Facebook page, and I wrote there, would anybody like to read a book on self-confidence from an Islamic perspective? And hundreds of people typed yes to read that book, confused on the topic. So I said, I have to write about this topic.
Yeah. So you touched upon the point about if you're confident, then people think it's like arrogance. So how can you tell the difference between the difference between self-confidence and arrogance? Like, how do we ensure that we are nurturing the former and not the latter?
To me, it comes down to one thing. Whatever is haram is harmful, and whatever is halal is beneficial. And that's really the difference, that confidence is productive and arrogance is destructive, right? So an arrogant person is going to cause problems. Well, if you got two people who are public speakers, right? To be a public speaker, you need confidence, definitely. Yep. One public speaker, he's boasting, he's putting other speakers down, he's doing character assassination, he's trying to only promote his own lectures. That becomes arrogance, right? The other person, he goes out there, he does a good job, do a good job. He wants what's best for everybody. He wants to succeed, but he wants his friends to succeed. He wants his students to succeed. That's confidence, right? So confidence is productive. It benefits the ummah. It benefits the individual. It benefits everybody. Arrogance is destructive. Confidence is Musa alayhi salam standing up to Fir'aun. Arrogance is Fir'aun denying the message of Musa alayhi salam, right? Confidence is Umar radiallahu anhu standing in front of the Kaaba and saying he's going to make the hijrah, you know, and who's going to stop him. That's confidence. Arrogance is Abu Jahl coming out and fighting the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the Battle of Badr, you know. So whatever causes destruction, whatever causes harm to society, that's when you know you've stepped over into arrogance. As long as you're being productive and you're benefiting the Ummah, then that's just confidence.
I like that. So that confidence is productive and arrogance is destructive. That's really nice. So my next question that I have here is that, okay, so it's easy to say that we're confident, that we're happy the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created us. And this might even be backed up by having a perfect social media presence. But then in the real world, like, you know, the world that we all live in, our actions may suggest otherwise. So I want to know, what are some signs of insecurity and low confidence that we can look out for so that we can do something about it?
Well, low confidence would be not having goals or not chasing after your goals because you don't think you have what it takes to complete them, right? For example, one of my goals is to become a best-selling author and to really go full-time into writing books. Now, I haven't been successful in selling books yet. I've written books, but maybe a best writing author doesn't make you a best-selling author. Now, what happens here is someone who's not confident will say, I've done what I could and no one's buying the books, forget it, I'm not going to write anymore. A confident person will think that this is just a minor setback, I'm going to keep going because this is my goal and I know I can do it with the help of Allah. So when you feel that you can't do it, you know that word, I can't, that's low self-confidence. And when I was a child, my mother used to tell me, for anything, don't ever say I can't. Don't ever say I can't do it. And that really became part of me. Whatever it is, I won't say I can't do it. I'm an Islamic teacher, but I build my own bookshelves. I would fix the electronics. I do anything. If I don't know how to do it, I Google it. I'd watch a video on it. I'd learn how to do it. I don't say I can't do it. I believe that we can learn anything. We can do anything. So I think the main sign in anybody's life that they have low self-confidence is this, I can't. And so many times I tell people, why don't you do this? You're good at this. They say, no, I can't do it. It's not that they can't. It's that they don't have the confidence. They don't believe they can do it. That's the most important.
That's
another sign of low self-confidence is, the other real major sign of low self-confidence is just going along with whatever society and culture says. You know, this is really a major sign that you know it's wrong, you know your family is wrong, you know your culture is wrong, you know what the people are doing is wrong, but you're doing it because you're scared to be different. You're scared, you don't have the confidence to stand up and speak the truth or to do things differently. This is a major sign of low self-confidence. So you hear people say things like, I know it's haram, but what will the people say? You know, they have this mindset. That's low confidence. You're not confident in your message. You're not confident in your deen. You're not confident in the fact that Allah is going to help you if you stand up for the truth. So the confidence is not there. So I believe that this going along with whatever people say, even when you know it's wrong, that means you don't have the confidence to stand up for what you believe in.
That's an interesting way to put it. So just go whatever, not kind of stepping back and asking yourself, is this what I want to stand up for, or is this the kind of life I want to live?
Yeah, and I think confidence also comes in our practice of Islam. You know, nowadays to wear the hijab, you know, in societies where it's looked down upon, that requires confidence. For a man to go for a business interview with a beard, even though they might reject him, that requires confidence. To pray your salah in public requires confidence. To do dawah requires confidence. Confidence is necessary to be a practicing Muslim in a society where you'll be a stranger for practicing Islam.
That's so true. So there was a point that you mentioned in the book about people who criticize, and it was said that such people who criticize are those with low self-esteem. And you know, it's an interesting observation, because you'd think that if someone criticizes, then it's because they've got everything sorted out in their life, which of course is not true. But I want to know, like, why criticizing is associated with low self-esteem.
Well, what I've found is that people who are unable to chase their own dreams, they don't want anybody else to chase their dreams. People who are cut off from chasing their own goals, they don't want other people to chase their goals. They become bitter, they become cynical, they think it's not possible, or they don't want somebody else to remind them of what could have been. So just say, for example, there was someone who wanted to be a best-selling author. Right? I'm talking about this because this is my goal, right?
Yeah.
So somebody wanted to be a best-selling author, and this person failed miserably when they were young and they gave up. Now that person's gone old, they've gone cynical, and they see a young person wanting to be a best-selling author. That old person is going to put that guy down. You know, he's going to say, it's not going to work, you're never going to be able to do it, don't waste your time, become a doctor, whatever it is. Where that's coming from is his own lack of self-confidence in his own ability to being a best-selling author. Right? He knows he couldn't do it, so he thinks, right?
No one else
should. That's really where it comes down. Yeah, no one else should do it. That's cynical. I mean, think about someone who's had a bad marriage. You know, they'll say things like, all men are the same, or all women are the same, or, you know, marriage is handcuffs. You know, they make
I've heard that so many times.
And this is coming from projecting their reality upon somebody else. That because their marriage isn't working out or hasn't worked out, they project this on everybody else. You know, so that's, again, their own confidence, their own lack of confidence that's expressing itself in this way. They don't realize it themselves, but when you study psychology, you realize that very often when somebody is talking to you and talking about your faults, they're actually talking about their own faults. They're actually talking about themselves, that we are mirrors to each other. You know, the hadith says that the believer is the mirror of the believer. We see in each other ourselves. So, I mean, when someone looks at you and they see faults in you, it's usually because they have the same faults in themselves.
That's actually very deep when you think about it, because it's like when someone goes and criticizes another, it's because they see something in them that it reminds them of something about their own self. So they're like,
you know, let me give you an example of this. You know, the issue of hijab. There's sometimes a young sister starts wearing hijab, and suddenly all the old sisters start getting jumpy and they start making noise and start talking bad to her. And she wonders, why are they doing this to me? It's because when they see her, they are reminded of the fact that they didn't do this. And they're reminded of the fact that they are sinful for not doing it. And they don't want that reminder. You know, if they can get her to take off the hijab, that's a reminder out of their way. Right? So they think they're criticizing her hijab. They're actually coming from their own point of view that they don't want to see any reminder of what they're supposed to be doing. Right?
So at the end, if someone were to criticize you, then it's never about you, it's about them, isn't it?
Well, the way I deal with criticism is, I separate it from the emotions, right?
Yeah.
Whether it comes to me positively or negatively, I don't look at it until I've emotionally calmed down. I mean, as soon as criticism comes, we all go into the state of anger, or we go into a fight or flight, you know, this runaway or fight type of response. So I don't handle the criticism straight away. I leave it for later. So if it's an email or a Facebook comment, whatever, I leave it aside. I look at it later when the emotions are not there. Then I look at it constructively. I say, is this a genuine point, or is this person just, you know, projecting their reality upon me? If it's a genuine point, I thank them for their point and I try to change my life accordingly. If not, then, you know, I thank them for their point and say I have a different perspective and leave it as that. Because at the end of the day, there is criticism, which is true. We all have our faults. We all have ways that we can improve. For example, many years ago, people would tell me that I talk too fast, or that I have too much of an accent, or that I use certain words which are not understood outside my country. And I began to improve my speech accordingly, to such an extent that now the people in my own country ask me what country I'm from, because I no longer have the local accent. But the point is that you have to listen to criticism. You can't shut it all off.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you're only going to listen to it, you know, there's more criticism out there than anything else. I mean, if you go to any Sheikh's Facebook page and look at the comment section, you know, the amount of criticism people throw at them, if they're going to listen to everything, no one's going to get any work done. This is the reality. So we have to separate what is beneficial for us from what is somebody else's projecting themselves, or what I say, just plain trolling.
True. And it's also, a lot of people do it because it's easy to criticize than actually do it yourself.
A lot of people.
Like how you were mentioning about on Facebook pages and stuff, there's so many people that criticize, and it's like they're not the one that are like in the forefront of doing the work, and they're just like sitting there saying, oh, you know, this, that, and this, and it's like...
Yeah, the keyboard warriors.
Yeah, the keyboard warriors, exactly.
The last ones to do anything in real life.
So then the next thing that I want to actually ask you about was, you spoke about keeping a mistake journal, and this was something that you spoke about in your book, and personally, I've never heard it before, because like generally it said, you know, celebrate your wins and other positive reinforcements. So I want to know more about this, and how does it actually further develop ourselves, especially in confidence?
Okay, mistake journal, I can't remember where I got it from. It was either Stephen Covey or Dale Carnegie, one of those authors who spoke about it in one of their books. I can't remember which one, but one of those authors had mentioned that whenever he made a mistake, he would sit down and reflect upon it and write it out. So I started trying this a few years ago. I started in 2012. You know, whenever I made, not for every small mistake, but like really big blunders that caused problems to somebody else. Right? And all of us make mistakes. So, you know, this happened a few times a year where you did something, you're like, how did I do that? Why did I do that? You know, I messed things up. Well, the thing about a mistake is it can be a learning experience. And the best way to learn from something is to analyze it. So what happens with most of us, we keep the mistake inside, right? And it boils and it plays in our mind and it drives us crazy. And this is even worse for an introvert because, you know, we always remember the most awkward things that happen to us in our lives. Right?
Yeah, for
so
sure.
That it just play, if you write it out, it stops playing on your mind. So this is what I do. And so when I make a major blunder, I write the date, I write out what happened, I write out what led to it, and then I write, what can I do in future to make sure this never happens again for the rest of my life? So at the end of the day, I've learned a lesson, a life lesson, and it's highly unlike, I mean, whatever mistakes I've written about in my mistake journal, they've only happened once in my life. I've never done them again for the rest of my life because I've analyzed them, I've extracted a lesson from them, and it's made me a better person. And this is something, I mean, many of us, we don't even want to admit our mistakes, leave alone analyze them and see what did I actually do wrong. Most of us play the blame game. When something goes wrong, we want to blame everybody and everything else. And for me, I sit back and say, where did I go wrong? Because really, that's the only way you are ever going to see it positively. If you're going to blame everybody else, you know, we're always going to have an excuse to remain as we are. We're not going to grow. We're not going to develop. We're not going to mature. So to actually analyze it and see, where did I go wrong and how can I improve? At the end of that whole process, you will feel more confident because you learned a lesson. And now you know, next time that situation happens, you're going to tackle it differently. You have a plan on how you're going to tackle it differently. And so in that way, it really does help you with your confidence. That you, I think in my book, I had a chapter called Reframing Mistakes, right? You stop looking at your mistakes. You start looking at it as life experience. You know, when you go for a job interview, people tell you that they're looking for someone with experience.
Yeah.
Someone with experience means that you already made your mistakes at some other job, so you're not going to make the same mistakes at their job. That's what it means, right?
Yeah.
They don't want somebody young who's fresh out of college because he's going to make all these mistakes there. So they'd rather you make your mistake at somebody else's firm and then come work for them having looks. Right? That's actually what experience is. And many of us think experience is just success and it's just, you know, doing things that you can be proud of. But really, experience is failure. And I actually was watching a TED Talk today which said that failure is a necessary ingredient for success. And that's why most people don't succeed, is because they are afraid to fail. You have to fail and learn from it, and then fail again and learn from it, and fail again and learn from it. And by that whole process is over, you're now on another level and you're able to succeed.
Yeah, that's true. On that note of failure, I remember reading somewhere how it said that if you're not failing a lot, then that means you're not trying harder. Like, you're not really trying.
Yeah, in fact, if you're not failing a lot, it means you're not trying anything new at all.
Yeah, that's so true. And to be able to admit your mistake is something that make you feel uncomfortable and take you out of your comfort zone. It's something that maybe not a lot of people want to do because of the pain that it causes.
Well, yeah. That takes us back to what we spoke about earlier about arrogance and confidence. Remember, the Prophet ﷺ said that arrogance is refusing to accept the truth. Right? That someone who doesn't want to accept that they make mistakes, someone who doesn't want to accept that they could be wrong, that's not confidence, that's arrogance. Right?
Yeah.
A humble person knows that he will make mistakes. And he'll be willing to learn from his mistakes. And he'll be willing to look at his mistakes and analyze them. You know, so the very ability to look at your mistakes and to know that you've made mistakes and to admit it, that requires humility. And if you are unable to do that, that means there's some ego involved, right? Because that's the only reason why anyone would not accept your mistakes, because there is some level of ego there holding us back from doing so. So really, that's where we go to the whole humility thing. That if we really want to grow in life, if we really want to experience any kind of success, we have to let go of that ego and admit when we are wrong and learn from our mistakes.
When you put it that way, yeah, it does really show how important it is to be able to pretty much admit your mistakes and move on from there. So I want to know, like, when you do have your mistake journal, is it like a physical journal or is it something that you, so the electronic journal? I just out of my own curiosity.
No, it's electronic for me, kept away somewhere on a file in my computer where no one will ever find it.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so we're actually nearing the ending of our interview. So before we end off, I just have final questions which we ask all our guests. So the first question is, what are your top three reads, particularly when it comes to confidence and what we discussed today?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Your top three reads, like books, favorite books.
Okay, my top three books regarding confidence.
Yeah, especially regarding confidence, although if it's not so, okay. Then, or if it's just personal vibe, it's fine.
Well, you know, I'd like to plug my own book, The Best of Creation. But when it comes to confidence, one book that really helped me was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers, right? Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I mean, that book really, it really goes straight to the heart of where most of our lack of confidence comes from, the issue of fear. I have a whole chapter about it in my book. She has a whole book just on that topic. And that's one book that really got me, you know, believing in myself in terms of confidence again. Another book which I think is really good for confidence, the name slipped out of my mind. I think The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Everyone should read that. Not specifically on confidence, but on all the tools you need for... Yeah, generally, I think that's a book I've suggested to every single person who's ever asked me what book should I read, right? And every one of them came back and said, thank you for suggesting that book, it's changed my life. I mean, those seven principles are just, they apply to everyone, whatever field you are in. As far as Islamic books are concerned on these topics, as I said, there isn't much written on this topic by Muslims. So the book Don't Be Sad by Dr. Ayad Al-Qarni, that's really one that kept me going when I was younger. I think a lot of people can relate to that. And related to that is his other book for women specifically called You Can Be the Happiest Woman in the World. I think his books are just written from a very optimistic
perspective. Was that actually by the same author as well? Because I remember seeing that book. Yeah. I haven't read it, but okay.
Yeah, the book by the same author, yeah. I mean, his books, they're written in Arabic and translated into English. Really, they have a very optimistic take. And I mean, for me, when I was younger, most of the Islamic books I read and most of the lectures I used to listen to were very hardcore and always about, you know, the this is haram, that is haram, and you're going to hellfire kind of things. And these books have a very light feel to it. It's full of hope, full of mercy, full of, you know, things are going to get better. You're going to learn from your mistakes. You know, Allah is going to help you. It's just full of positive messages. And I think I've drawn a lot of inspiration for my writings from his writings as well. So, Don't Be Sad by Dr. Ayad Al-Qarni is a book that I think every Muslim home should have. With that also, the book Enjoy Your Life by Dr. Muhammad Al-Arifi, another Arabian scholar. I don't know if you've read that book, Enjoy Your Life.
I've seen that book. I actually never got to finish it because I was like taking it a chapter at a time, but now since you reminded me, I think I should go back.
Yeah, for me, sometimes when I'm down, I just open randomly any chapter in that book and read a story. It's just really, really beautiful and optimistic. It really, really just gets you going.
Yeah, that was a good book. So our next question that we have here is, what is your favorite life hack in terms of growing your confidence?
My favorite life hack in terms of growing my confidence, I've got so many actually. Well, for me, one would be talking to myself in the mirror.
Sorry?
I think that's something that people are talking to myself in the mirror.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think so some people actually find that crazy.
To the mirror. No.
But when I'm really feeling low and I know things about myself in the mirror and say, you can do it. I literally give myself a lecture. I look myself in the eyes and give myself a lecture. And it works. It actually boosts me up. And another thing that really boosts me is having motivational quotes all over the place. In my books, on my computer, everywhere. You know, just having motivational quotations lying everywhere. For example, my background on my computer would be the same statement, you are a writer, so make sure you write something today. So no matter what I'm feeling like, I'm going to end up writing something that day. So, you know, putting those quotations everywhere. And then, of course, you know, to me, one of the most important things that keeps me confident is that understand that Allah has a plan. You know, whatever happens, I just tell myself, Allah has a plan. This is part of Allah's plan. And, you know, one day you will understand why it happened. So no matter how badly I feel to be failing, no matter how things seem to be sinking, you just have that confidence to move forward because, you know, Allah has a plan. And, you know, everything will go according to His plan. So I remind myself of that with statements like, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, and Hasbunallah wa ni'mal waqil. And, you know, these kind of statements that remind you that Allah is in control of everything. So if you succeeded, it's because Allah wanted you to succeed. If you didn't succeed, it's because Allah wanted you to learn a lesson. He wanted to test your sabr. He wanted to see how badly you want it. Allah has a plan, and you just have to go along with that. So, you know, that's the third thing I do, is that whenever I'm feeling low in confidence, I remind myself Allah has a plan, and I just need to keep working, and Allah will help me eventually.
That's true. So finally, where can our listeners find you online and to be able to find more about this, the book and everything?
Yeah, I have two blogs. One is my Islamic blog where I write Islamic articles.
Yep.
That's abumuawiyah.com.
Yep.
And the second one is where I write self-help articles, and that is islamicselfhelp.com. So we now to write about confidence and time management and goal setting and productivity. That you'll find at islamicselfhelp.com. When I'm writing about fiqh and aqidah and dawah and tafsir, that you'll find at abumuawiyah.com. As for the book, at islamicselfhelp.com, there is a page there on my books. But you'll actually find it everywhere. I mean, if you want my book, Best of Creation, it's on Kindle, it's on Kobo, it's on iTunes, it's on Google Books. Whatever e-reader you use,
you forgot Amazon.
You will find. I said Kindle. Yeah, so Amazon Kindle. It's also on Nook. It's also available in PDF format on various websites. And you can always order a hard copy off Amazon or off Barnes & Noble. So, yeah, there's a variety of places to buy it. Anyone who's on your favorite e-reader, inshallah.
Yeah, so we'll include all this in our show notes so that they can be able to find it and be able to go through. So that was the two blogs and the book, which is available on all major
bookstores
and e-readers. Okay, excellent. Okay, so since we're ending off our interview, is there anything, any final words you want to say that you haven't mentioned before and you want to touch upon?
You know, when it comes to these topics of self-confidence, we need more people writing on these topics. I don't want to be the only one writing about these topics. It was actually hard for me to find material on this, and so, you know, my advice to brothers and sisters out there is, let's get involved in these fields. You know, let's start, you know, instead of relying on others for our guidance in these areas, let us be the leaders in whatever fields we're into. So I would love to see other people writing on similar topics. I mean, I myself, my book on time management, I've written a book on halal entertainment, I've written a book on confidence. My next book is going to be on homeschooling. You can see I tackle topics that people don't normally write about, right? And anyone who asks me, tells me they want to be a writer, what should they write about? My advice always is, write about something that nobody's written about before. Otherwise, it's not worth writing.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one day a young boy came to me and said he wants to write a book about Salah. And I asked him, what are you going to write about Salah? And he told me, you know, the basics of how to pray Salah. I told him, but there's already 100 books on that topic. What would be the purpose of writing that book? He said, but I just want to write a book. And I told him, if you want to write a book, look in the community. See what nobody has written about and what will benefit people and write yeah. about that. To be honest, yeah, like, look at any of my books, you'll find it on such topics. And likewise, you know, I advise people accordingly. If you're going to be a writer, if you're going to be a speaker, I mean, just look at Muslim Life Hackers. Right? This is something nobody else is doing. And that's what we all need to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so thank you so much once again, Abu Mawia, for joining us on the show. It was a great interview and I learned quite a few things today. And we hope to see you soon as well on the show. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So that wraps up the interview with Abu Mawia. One thing that I learned from this interview that stood out for me was the whole idea about having a mistakes journal, because I can so relate to the part about having, whenever we experience blunders, it just goes on loop setting. Like you see a video, how you put it on loop, and that's what happens in my mind. And so actually taking the time to analyze that mistake so that we can be able to further grow, I think that is a very powerful way of being able to use these mistakes and these challenges in our life to further better ourselves. Anyway, I'd love to hear your feedback on everything we do on the show, including any topics or guests that you'd like to see on. You can do so by going to muslimlifehackers.com/contact. If you want to support the show, the best way to show your support is by telling your family and friends, online or in person. Now, friends, that brings me to the end of the episode. Until next time, remember, the only person you should aim to be better than is the person that you were yesterday. So give it your best today.
Thank you for listening to the Muslim Life Hackers podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave a review for us on iTunes by going to muslimlifehackers.com/iTunes.